cried aloud, I shook my hands, what I'm doing here. All of these days, for I look around me and my eyes confound me, and it's just too bright as the days keep turning into night.
You're listening to Dig Deep on KAXE KBXE. I'm Heidi Holton with liberal Aaron Brown, conservative Chuck Marrone. We've been talking about the state of the United States of America, the civility, the discourse. We keep hearing things about how bad it is and how bombarded we are. And I'm curious from both of you, because you are guys that are involved in your communities. You do things to kind of, I view the work that both of you do is to kind of better the world around you, raising children for a better world someday. How do you keep hope? How do you, also people don't like you. Always, I'm going to say that.
I mean, I like you, but really?
I know both Chuck and Aaron in the work that you do have some
critics.
Critics is better than enemies. But how do you keep on going?
Wow, that's a hard question. You know, I think that I'm on the planning commission in Brainerd, and we have very spirited conversations there. We don't agree on everything. I try to, and I think there's a lot of people who don't like me personally because of my work on the planning commission. I certainly bring up topics that I think are uncomfortable for people, that are outside the box, and kind of push that in a certain way. I think it's really important when we're talking with our neighbors, especially, is to start by listening to them and understanding where they're coming from. And that's like a cheap, like, rhetoric thing to say, like, well, walk a mile in a man's shoes, understand. No, I actually think it's important to repeat back to them what they said. Repeat it back to them in your own words and say, is this what you're saying? Like, am I understanding you correctly? And I've actually found that more situations, and last night we had one at my planning commission meeting where it was very, very heated. And I fundamentally disagreed with one of my fellow commission members. And I restated what he said, and I said it in a different way. And I said, am I understanding you clearly? And the answer was yes. Yes, you just said what I believe. And I'm like, okay, we disagree. Here's why I think differently. I went out of my way to say, like, you have a valid point, and I'm hearing it. And that really diffused the situation. Mm-hmm. And I think before I did that, we were kind of looking at like a 3-3 tie vote. And by the end, it was a 5-1 vote in a different direction. And I'm not going to say, like, you know, I solved that problem, mm-hmm. but I think the path of trying to create an empathetic understanding, like, I don't agree with you, but it's not because I don't understand you, I think is like a first step towards how do you make it work.
Do you think that he heard you differently after you took
yes.
the time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I think that is, I think what's missing from our rhetoric today, if I get someone on Twitter who says something stupid and then I tweet back at them and we're just like tweeting, yelling back and forth at each other, I am not trying to understand that person. I'm not looking at that person's eyes. I'm not trying to grasp the context by which this comes from. I lose all of that. And so all it is just cheap words back and forth. If we want to start to solve problems, we've got to step back from that and kind of discipline ourselves to say, where is this coming from? What is the deeper issue? How do I understand that and acknowledge it? The big issue we had at the Planning Commission was a belief by one member in particular that the free market should determine how much parking there is in a city. And I fundamentally acknowledge that, like, I, in a sense, agree with that. Like, in a best case scenario, that's what's happened. Here's why I don't think that's possible in this instance. And so I wasn't invalidating his being. I wasn't invalidating his beliefs. I was agreeing with his fundamental belief. But I was saying, here's where I think we're strained from that in this instance. And we were able to mm-hmm. reach a resolution. He didn't vote for what I wanted, but everybody else did. So
I think I teach communication. So, you know, yeah, that's public speaking and rhetoric and things like that. And I talk about persuasion. But I think one of the more useful things I teach is about conflict And I don't just mean like political conflict. I mean interpersonal conflict, the kind of disagreements we have every day with everyday people at work, at home, and school. And what Chuck just described was a textbook example of what we call conflict management. And that's the term I prefer to use rather than resolution, because resolution implies that something could happen and we wouldn't have conflict anymore. And if you've ever been in a marriage or a long-term relationship of any kind, you know that that's not realistic, that even if you fix the thing you're arguing about today, there might be another thing. So conflict is something that's always happening, and it happens because we care about it. We have conflict over how to run our cities, our state, or our federal government because we care about the outcomes of those debates. We care about this country. So that's what I take away on a big scale, is that when you have a hardcore right winger and a hardcore left winger, and they hate each other so much viscerally, I think one encouraging thing we can take out of it is that they do care about something. They care about something. And that thing that they care about, even if they fundamentally disagree with how to manage it or deal with it, is important. And the fact that there's that passion, I think, matters. You might not get them to agree, but maybe we can get to a point where, as we do after crises, less lately, but 9/11 key among the recent history, where when we all are confronted with a new reality that is very big, I think our sense of belonging is much higher, and our sense of doing something about it is much higher. Just like when there's a financial crisis at your school district, or sometimes you can get conservatives and liberals to agree on a bond measure or something that is needed for a community. And so you can find these agreements. I think we see a lot more of them on the local level. The way a community responds after a natural disaster is always inspiring. It's rarely contentious. It's rarely, oh, the conservative mayor was ill-prepared for that tornado, we're going to take him out. We don't see that on the local level as much as we do on the state and federal level, because we're close and we all agree that we care about this place where we live. I live in an increasingly conservative area, and even our congressional district is more conservative than it's been in recent years. And so I'm finding myself socially just being around people who disagree with me more. And I feel the urge is that anyone who would feel in that situation, maybe I would rather be around people who agree with me more, things like that. But I actually find a lot of encouragement in the community stuff, the kids, the kids' activities, the community activities, the traditions and things like that that you can get together with people on. And it just shows that we do have things in common. And I think if you can break those cycles, and frankly, getting off of social media and spending more time in a real world situation, communicating with people one-on-one, that 5-1 vote was possible because you were in the same room and you could create bonds. If not change the minds of everybody, you could at least create that kind of bond for a working relationship that would lead to an outcome rather than an unbreakable 3-3 tie, or something like that, that we right. often seem stuck with in our society. No one wins. And when we feel our pride is at stake, or our way of life, or our culture is at stake, we feel we have to go through the motions of arguing with somebody on our Facebook page. I've been there, and it's. I'm not saying I'm infallible on this. It's certainly something that I've struggled with, and I hate myself when I don't do a good job of it. And that's, I think, where we all are as a country. And I think if we can break out of that and get into the idea that we're going to disagree, that is normal, and that is healthy, and that is how we produce better results in our government, better things, disagreement over the best way to, have prom if you're a junior on your high school prom committee. Disagreement should produce the best event possible. Disagreement over how to run a radio station should produce the best programming possible. That's the kind of thing that I think we forget about, and we are reminded of it when we spend time with people. And when we self-select our surroundings and we fail to talk to people, we view the world as our enemy and we are alone.
For me, it's been very helpful to identify and give name to the water that we swim in, because it gives me a context to look at it. I've said in the past that I mediate my own news and try to get it on a big delay. So I'm not getting the latest news. I don't listen to the news at the top of the hour. I don't generally read like the paper the day it comes out. I certainly do not listen to cable news. I don't listen to talk radio. I will listen to things on a delay. And part of the reason is that I don't want to be drawn up. And this is for my own personal health. I'm not doing this to say like, this is what everyone should do. But I've found that I'm like a healthier, better, more balanced, happier person when I mediate my intake. I took social media off my phone. I still am on Facebook. I still am on Twitter. I still interact with people, but I don't interact in that way. It's a much more kind of mediated experience because I want the sea that I swim in to be different. I don't want it to be that kind of toxic sea that we've created. That being said, I do feel like we are in need of, as a society, a certain level of, like, if we want to call it marriage counseling, or I don't know exactly like the way you describe it. I was even thinking about like my role on the Planning Commission. We're going to have three new openings coming up on my little board that I'm on. I was thinking like, what kind of people would I like on that board? They're not necessarily people who agree with me. Like I don't really, for me, it's not like a prerequisite that you agree with Chuck Marone for me to say, boy, you should really, submit your name to be on the board. I really want people who are thoughtful. I want people who, like you say, care about the community, care about things. I want people who are willing to listen, willing to learn. And I think that right now, today, this is how I'm going to be voting in the next election. This is how I've been voting for quite a while now. If I think that you are an open-minded person who's going to be thoughtful, who I could sit down and have a conversation with, I'm going to support you. And that's at the local, that's at the most local level up to the insanity where I don't really have that choice. I think that if we want to start to fix this, we're going to have to, at the very local level, look at the thought process and the deliberative process of the people we're electing, and the people we're putting in positions of authority in our churches, in our businesses, in our volunteer organizations. And I think really reward and have an emphasis for people who are thoughtful and deliberative. That seems a little bit, even just voicing that seems a little bit idealistic, yeah, right? Like if we can all just...
I agree with you, Chuck. How do we get it to happen? Yeah.
I think that socially, and this is, again, I'll give you the trigger warning. I'm about to go like full conservative. I think that part of having a local culture and part of being locally involved in a community is a certain amount of sanction. And sanction is a, in progressive circles is a bad thing. It's often affiliated with hierarchies and, you can't do that, and limits on personal behavior. I think that we should have sanctions socially for people who are disbehave. We had a mutual friend, and I won't mention their name, who was just a jerk, would come on my blog and would write nasty stuff all the time. I would show up here at the radio station. He would come and accost me and chew me out because how dare you be a conservative? And you know what? I kind of blackballed him from my life. I denied him access to my website. I blocked him on Twitter. I blocked him on Facebook. I refused to like engage with him, not because we disagreed, but because of his approach, like the way he went about it. I think that is the kind of things that local social communities do. They say that behavior is out of bounds. That behavior is okay. I think at the local level, we can and should do that. I think we should say like that. I may agree with you, but that's not an acceptable way to have discourse. I may disagree with you, but I can't even hear you when you act that way. We can do that at the local level. And I, part of why people don't like me when you said that, part of why is because I do that. I'm like, I don't agree. I don't even hear what you're saying because it's not, I'm not going to engage with you. I'm actually going to walk away and not be part of this because the way you're approaching this is not at all helpful.
And I think it's this good reminder to people that you can put some guidelines on how you go about your work in the world. I know a lot of times I'm really glad that I work here at KEXE because I don't engage with people just for my job. I don't engage with them on social media of any kind. We get slammed for doing wrong things. We get tagged on Twitter for things we're supposedly doing. And it irritates me. It sticks with me, but we don't respond back to that because of the way they're doing it. And we keep doing the work we're meant to do. I heard an interview on National Public Radio earlier this morning, and it was with, of all things, an actress. It was Melissa McCarthy, but she was talking about getting ready for this role, and it was a more serious role. And she just said she started to pay attention to at least once a day, have eye contact with somebody and listen to their story, even, you know, just at the grocery store or, you know, and I think that's part of this isolation. We don't have to go to the grocery store anymore if we don't want to. We don't have to do certain things, but we all know what that's like. If you have a moment in that interaction, when you do go to the grocery store and someone talks to you like a real person, and it changes kind of the way you go about the day. And you may not, you know, have totally different politics from this person, but you both live in this community. They're there in their job. You're acknowledging what they're doing, you know?
I think this is what's astounding. I walk almost everywhere I go back home. I've got to drive and pick up the kids, but if I'm not driving way out to the edge of town to the school, I try to walk everywhere I go. There's a culture of people who walk, and a huge percentage of them are people who walk because they don't have a choice. I have a choice to walk. And there's a few people like that, but a lot of them are not. There's a culture there, and it's fascinating because we look each other in the eye, we say hi, you get to know these people because you see them over and over and over again. When I was a commuter, I was, again, immersed in this sea because I had my radio on, I had my mm-hmm. whatever on, and I'm getting bombarded by the stuff. Imagine a society, go back 100 years, where driving wasn't an option, where everybody had to walk. You would, in the course of your normal day, in human habitat, basically come into interaction with dozens, hundreds of people that you had to make eye contact with, have some social interaction with. Was this comfortable? Not always. Was this fun? Not always. Did you wind up meeting people who you didn't like? Yeah. Would it be easier for you to avoid them like we do today? Yeah. Were you better off having to have those interactions regularly? Yeah. I think the habitat that we built for human beings 100 years ago was probably healthier for our social discourse than the one we have created today.
Can I just say, this is going to sound bad, but back in college, I smoked. And and one of the things I really miss about smoking, one of them.
Oh.
People say this. I hear this all the time with smokers.
Is the way you had informal society mm-hmm. of the 25 to 35% of the people who smoked who would come out at regular times mm-hmm. and have a cigarette together. I worked at a place that had a defined break time, and everyone would come out there. And these were not people I worked with directly. These were other people. It was a community.
There's a culture.
Yeah, there's a culture. And I know for a fact that in college there were friends I had that I definitely wouldn't have had if I hadn't met them and talked to them on smoke breaks after class. You know, and that was a good thing for me.
Let me bring that home as kind of like a way
smoking why... Smoking is bad,
no,
kids.
But I think a reason why that's so important is because if I'm on Twitter and I get someone from one of the coasts who tweets at me about gay marriage, da 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 da, I'm going to be like, whatever, just tweet at me. But if I'm out on a smoke break with someone and I get to know them a little bit like that, and then they say, you know what, my partner or what have you, or they start, that's a different conversation. That's a very different conversation. Those are the conversations that we need to have about deeply contentious issues. And we don't have them today. We have them mediated in different ways. And I think if you're listening to this and you want to be someone who's part of the solution, you have to actually talk to people in your community.
And not with a mind to convince them to change their mind.
Right. No.
Yeah.
No, you actually need to talk just as humans, as friends, as getting to know them. I've lived in my neighborhood now for 3 years. I know all my neighbors. I love them. I think they're wonderful people. I have no clue, zero, how any of them would vote on anything. I really don't. There's a couple of them that I've talked like, you know, you hear that, you know, it's like talk like that. But for the most part, it's life. It's things that are more important in life.
And is it's different being in town than being out?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. When I lived out kind of isolated from everybody else, you never had those conversations. I think that if I had to sit down and like solve problems, I would want to do it with the 10 people who live around me. Not because I know how they think and they agree with me on every issue, but because we have some commonalities that we can build off of. That's what problem solving is.
Well, it makes me feel good that we get to have conversations like this. These are kind of old fashioned conversations on radio that are extended. People are listening to them. So give yourself some kudos for tuning in to Dig Deep, because it doesn't happen everywhere and it is civil discourse. So, and thank you guys for doing it.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to the podcast and then rip each other to shreds.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Tear it up.
Dig deep. You can catch the podcast edition at our website, kaxe.org, or sign up through iTunes. Here's Rhianna Giddens with a Sister Rosetta Tharpe song. Thanks for listening from all of us here at KAXE, KBXE.
Up above my head, I hear music in the air. Up above my head, I hear music in the air. Up above my head.